This is a moment in Wine and Hip Hop, presented to you by Jermaine Stone, aka the Wolf of Wine.
Wine and Hip Hop, Wine and Music. Yo.
Turn me up, bro. You know what it is.
Check this out. Oh, yeah.
You'll be the life of the party.
Wine and Hip Hop really mirrors the conversations that we have in my office about wine and music. What's good, Josh? Your man Jermaine Showtime Stone, a.k.a. the Wolf of Wine, a.k.a. the Czar Bobs, a.k.a. Young Thanos, because I'm out here collecting Infinity Stones, a.k.a. Jermaine Bourdain, a.k.a. the Lost Son of Burgundy. Yes, there has been a few more a.k.a.s added since my last podcast. As you can see, shit been busy. I've been all over the world. I've been, you know, getting nominated for Emmys and James Beard Awards and all that. But yeah, man, I've been looking forward to recording another podcast for quite some time. I actually already recorded this episode and had to scrap it because there's been so much going on in music that by the time it was edited and ready to go out, there was even more things that happened. So, you know, look, everybody been on me. Everybody wants to know what I thought about the whole Drake and Kendrick thing and what I would pair with it and all that. So I needed to just bring everybody up to speed on where I was with everything. And man, I'm hyped though. I ain't gonna hold you. As a hip hop fan, it's a great time to be engaged in the music for what I do with bridging wine and hip hop. I think this is also a great opportunity because hip hop is so much in the forefront of just everyday media these days because of what's going on. So, you know, here we are, man. But I'm glad to be back. Thank you all for continuing to stay tuned. You know, Street Som dropped. It has been such a great, great reception. So thank you to everyone that's been tuned in, that has been enjoying the show, everybody that's been hitting me up about the show, telling me how much you've enjoyed it. You know, it's funny because even while, you know, season one was on, people were already asking me about season two. Everybody's continuing to ask me about season two, just so you know, we are working on some things, but you know, y'all just gonna have to stay tuned on that, man. But the reception on Street Som has been amazing. Shout out to Taste Made, shout out to every host that I've kicked it with, you know, shout out to my girl Shakira, shout out to Chef Mimi, you know, shout out to Tiff. Like, yo, it has been such an amazing journey. I've learned a lot about myself. For those of you that haven't watched Street Som yet, make sure you tap in to the Taste Made streaming network. It's also available on YouTube and pretty much everywhere that you stream TV. You know, that's where the whole Jermaine Bourdain thing came from. It's like, I'm a sommelier traveling the country, getting to know different cities. I hit different food central spots. I link up with a foodie everywhere I go. And they helped me to get to know the city by introducing me to all of these different restaurants. And, you know, so it's a dope show. Of course, we get to know one another. But as the Street Som, y'all know I'm a little bit of an off-the-wall dude. I'm creating these dope food and wine pairings pretty much everywhere we go. And my goal is to break convention every time I do another pairing. So the style of pairings that I'm doing is not the sort of thing that you would be used to. Clearly, it's a very good show because we were nominated for an Emmy as well as a James Beard Award. So definitely thank you to everyone on the Emmy boards that voted for it, everyone in the James Beard organization that voted for it. Please continue to vote for it so that we win this award. I feel great about it, but honestly, for a dude like me coming from where I'm coming from, you know, having gone through the things that I've gone through before my wine career, during my wine career, and even during the time shooting these shows, I had a lot of shit going on in the background of my life. So, you know, it's just dope to, one, have that time documented, but also to show that it has not been wasted time. And to see that the show has continued to connect with so many people, you know, the Taste Made Network is in front of 300 million people per month. So I can't even imagine how many people have seen it, as well as the social media shorts that we've been doing for it, the power of street knowledge, where I'm doing other wine. I'm answering a bunch of wine questions. So it's a lot of shit happening, man. But it's funny because I realized that I feel like people kind of don't really know what I do. And I really had to get back to this content game. So I'm very excited to be back. And it's at a great time in hip hop because there's a lot happening. You know, even with that, the season for Street Simon concluded. Since that, you know, I've continued to grind. We hosted another wine and hip hop festival. It was a 1-day pop-up joint. It was a lot of fun. I'm actually drinking one of the wines that we had on our live podcast, the Rodney Strong Symmetry. And we'll get into that and a few of why I'm drinking that today and why we drank it on that show. But first, I wanted to just kind of get you guys in the loop of what I have been working on because it's been a quiet few months. In this downtime, chilling, wrapping my mind around what the next thing for wine and hip hop was, I wrote a book. So this whole thing started, and really in the Chicago episode, I was chilling with this artist, Jenny Vaez. She was my tour guide in Chicago, and she's a really, really dope artist. And her first art exhibit was created, it was inspired actually, after the breakup of her engagement. She started painting, and you know, she was super inspired. She created an entire show that really just came from this emotional pain that she was going through. You know, I empathized with her because I'd been writing a lot more rhymes, and I never stopped writing rhymes. And I actually didn't really realize until that moment that I would write a lot more whenever I was going through something. So right before I started shooting that show, I was started my separation, currently going through a divorce. So I realized, wow, you know, we relate because I'm writing a lot more. And she was really the one who was like, yo, you got to share this stuff. You got to put it out. I was never trying to be no out there rapper. I let that go. You know, it's not really, I didn't want to rap professionally. You know, I'm cool with what I do. You know, I'm fine. I make a living. I'm good with that. And then also, like, I just, you know, I never really wanted to be out there like that. However, at the same time, I'm kind of already out there, so why the hell not, right? But Jenny made a really great point that art is not yours. Art is to be shared. And there's a lot more things behind that. But the next episode, I went to Houston. I was with Bun B in the studio. You know, we did a wine pairing. He left, and then I linked up with this dude, Concept P, who's a multi-platinum producer. Shout to Concept. Appreciate you, dog. We still got one on the way. Linked up with Concept P, and we recorded a joint because I was already in the stool. He was there, and it just kind of it got me going again, you know. So I'm still friends with people in the music game. I came back from a trip one day, and I was talking with my dog Arsonist from the Heatmakers. You know, I'd written a rhyme in Portugal. I was actually on the Douro River. I wrote this rhyme. I let Arsonist hear it. He's like, yo, bro, get in the booth. Next thing you know, we had 5-6 songs done. So with that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this shit out. However, I still didn't really feel comfortable putting just a record out. And I'm not trying to go sell a million records. So that said, you know, I had the music and I'm just kind of chilling with it. Like all of this is happening like post Street Sim, you know. So again, this is me catching you guys up on where I've been, what's been going on. Yeah, man, I had these records. I'm trying to figure out how do I want to put them out. And I'm playing the record for one of my friends. And, you know, I'm breaking each line down. And as I'm breaking all the lines down, I'm realizing I'm teaching her about wine. So she was like, yo, you should do this at your tastings, you know? So I'm like, okay, cool. Now, because I rap about wine so much in my bars, it's like, you know, I'm like a wine pusher T, you know what I'm saying? Instead of me rapping about moving dope, I'm rapping about moving wine, and I'm rapping about what my experience has been in the wine game. And, you know, I've been in the business now for 20 years, you know, so I really seen a lot, I've done a lot, but I've also done a lot before I got into the wine business. And, you know, my story is real. And y'all know a lot about my story through interviews and probably following me online. But there are a lot of holes in that. There are people that still don't know what the hell I actually did when I was in wine auction. There are definitely people that don't know what my life was like before I got into the wine business. And all that stuff is really detailed in my raps. So another reason why I felt like, okay, you know, 20 years in, now this is a great time to begin to release things. But how do I do that? I don't want to put this out for the masses. I don't want to try to go get a top 40 hit. So after thinking about how I was able to connect and educate my friend about wine, I decided, let me just break all of these. Let me write a book and break down every wine reference that I talked about in my raps in this book. Similar to how, you know, Jay-Z had Decoded. This is what I'm doing in my book, which you can actually jump on the wait list now at wineandhiphop.com. The name of the book is called Wine Bars, Volume 1, For the Love, because I wrote this thing for the love of just the art. This was not something that I wrote to put out. I'm doing it as a wine book so that, you know, we can teach people about wine. When you think about what hip hop has done for years, I've learned so many things from rap lyrics. I've learned about kings in Africa. I've learned about different brands. Like I say this all the time, you know, I see so many dudes in my old neighborhood rocking Balenciaga and all this. Like they don't sell Balenciaga on Fordham Road. They learn about this in the raps. And so I've found that, you know, one of the main reasons I've always wanted to connect wine and hip hop was because hip hop tells a story. Wine also tells a story. And you can learn a lot just through listening and studying lyrics. Like I know so many people out there, and y'all could probably relate to this, like your moms would tell you, like, you better know your books the same way you know these raps. Bottom line, that's ultimately what happens. So I think that this this wine book is a great way for me to connect with people. So there is a soundtrack that comes along with it. And the only way you can get access to the music is by purchasing the book. The EP is available through QR code download in the book. And, you know, I'm excited about it. I'm really looking forward to you guys hearing it. It's 100% produced by the Heatmakers. My dog Arsonist, once he heard me spit that rhyme, he was like, yo, bro, you got something. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear it. Again, go to wineandhiphop.com right now. You can jump on the wait list. The book comes out this August. So definitely tap in and stay tuned for that. But, you know, I got to heat the streets up first. So I'm going on tour, you know, so that's the other thing I've been working on. The Terroir Tapes listening sessions. Now, you've probably seen me advertise this on my Instagram page. Tickets are currently available. The Terroir Tapes listening sessions are, you know, it's me pairing wine regions and hip hop regions. Now, terroir is the French term for the growing conditions around the grapes that are in your wine. And it's a combination of these elements. So your climate, right? Is it a hot climate? Is it a cool climate? A cold climate? All of these different things have flavors that they contribute to the grapes. Is it also the soil? You know, the soil, the composition of the soil. What is it made up of? Is it volcanic soil? Is it chalk soil? Is it clay soil? Again, these are things that play into what you're tasting. The topography, is it grown on a slope? Is it flat land? If it's on a slope, you're going to get a different type of water drainage when it rains. You know, if it's on flat land, the water's just going to sit there in a puddle. Think about what happens if you overwater a plant, right? All of these different things come into play into what you're tasting. Also, regional identity matters. Certain varieties of grapes, the kind of grape that's in it, they thrive in different climates. They give you different expressions based on where it is. So something to really wrap your head around when you're learning about wine is the terroir. What are the growing conditions? And we say this all the time, and something I've tried to really highlight to people for a long time, and one of the major similarities of wine and hip hop is that wine is a product of its environment, right? Now, if you know about hip hop, you know that hip hop is a product of its environment as well. The same way that wine has a regional identity, hip hop does as well. But wine drinkers talk about terroir. Hip hop lovers don't talk about terroir. We don't talk about the different elements that contribute to why the music sounds the way that it does. So I actually broke that down into a few different categories. One is the vernacular. So the way that we speak, you know what I'm saying? The slang that we're using, the dialect, you know, accents, all that shit, that plays into the vernacular. Then you have the musicality, the beats, the tempos, the instruments that are used, the content of the actual words that are being said. These are things that play into the musicality. But then you also have these socioeconomical conditions. You know, how do people make money there? Geographically, where is it, right? Where do people hang out at? Where do you socialize? These are all things that play into what creates that regional identity. And I think that us breaking down terroir as wine drinkers are one of the things that help people to enjoy wine that much more. Like, so often I hear people say, oh yeah, I really like wine, but I don't know anything about it. Now, you don't say that about hip hop though, right? And so while I always try to help people understand, it's like, I don't necessarily teach wine education, I teach wine appreciation. And understanding terroir is one of the ways that people appreciate wine that much more. It's also one of the things that help you to navigate a wine list. So I'm really breaking this down in these tastings in a way that you're going to walk away learning more about wine. You'll learn more about hip hop and appreciate them both in different ways. And it's just a fun conversation. You know, like all of these things, this is based on my opinion, right? But we're going to be having these cool group conversations. These tastings are more intimate. I'm capping it at about 50 people per tasting. So definitely grab your tickets early. I'm starting out in Oakland on the 31st with the Black Food and Wine Experience. Shout out to my girl, Chef Mimi. Again, Street Som connection. Then I'm going to LA right before the Emmys. So, you know, it's a fun little pre-Emmy party. Then I'm back in New York. I'm hitting Cincinnati. I'm hitting DC. And there are a lot more cities that are going to be added to this. So, you know, definitely stay tuned and I hope to see you there. The cool thing is our VIPs are going to have an actual listening session of my project. So, and that way I can actually break down all of the things that I'm talking about in these lyrics. So again, it's going to be a really cool wine and hip hop experience. It's completely unique to me. And this is my expression, man. You know, this is the victory lap. Yeah. I'm 20 years deep in the game, man. You know, so I'm really, really excited about that. And I've been doing a lot of work on putting this together. So I'm looking forward to seeing y'all out on the road. I'm looking forward to celebrating these awards with y'all and just getting it in and hearing more about what's going on with y'all. I want to have these conversations about wine, about hip hop. I travel all over the world, and to see the impact that we're making, you know, it's everything to me. You know what I'm saying? That's what keeps me excited. That's what keeps me going. So I hope y'all grab y'all tickets today. Now that y'all know what's going on, where I've been at, all that good stuff, we got to get into the main event, right? And I think this is also a great way to key you guys in on what you can expect at the Terroir Tapes listening sessions. So one of the questions, I talked about what's going on in hip hop, Kendrick Lamar, Drake, it's the battle that we've been waiting on for years, right? And I got so many DMs with people asking me, what do you pair with this? What do you pair with this? What do you pair with the Kendrick Lamar Drake thing? So, boom, I got my pairing for y'all, right? And this was like an easy one, man. Because what do you pair with beef? Right? Pause. This is real beef, man. This is beef that's been happening for cooking for years, really. And now, you know, now it's time to get served, you know. So for a pairing with beef, I think that a great pairing is always going to be a Cabernet Sauvignon. So I went with the Rodney Strong Symmetry, right? And again, shout to Rodney Strong. Now, the Symmetry is a classic Bordeaux blend, uses very classic Bordeaux varietals. It's dominant Cabernet Sauvignon, but you also got some Merlot, Petit Verdot, Cabernet Franc. These are all classic Bordeaux wines. So, you know, if you don't have access to this specifically, you know, you can go get a cab or you can go grab some Bordeaux. But I'm picking that because it goes great with beef, right? Pause. And the reason cab goes great with beef is that you have good structure there. You know, when I say structure, it's like it can stand up to strong flavors and it holds the flavor in. It doesn't just go away as soon as you take a bite of something. Those fruit flavors from the Merlot are going to stick in there and you can really enjoy that. You have very robust flavors that don't go away as soon as you take a bite of something. And that combination of flavors, that's what you enjoy. It's a classic pairing, man. You know what I'm saying? You have some of this with a burger. It's A1. You know what I mean? So that said, you pairing beef, go with some, you can rock with the Rodney Strong Symmetry, go with some Cabernet Sauvignon, go grab some Bordeaux. And again, based on where it's from, it's all going to express itself differently. Now, I mentioned earlier, this is actually the second time that I'm recording this podcast. And it's very interesting because I think that we can all agree that at this point, Kendrick Lamar is the clear winner here, right? Like Drake is getting dragged, you know? And that's not a knock to Drake at all. When this thing started, I didn't have Kendrick Lamar picked as someone that would be the winner. I really didn't. I actually had J. Cole picked on this. Now, I'm going to break this down a little bit for those of you that may not know how this whole thing started and like how we got here, right? It started out with the Drake song featuring J. Cole, First Person Shooter, where J. Cole had this line talking about the big three. Is it who's the greatest MC? Is it Kendrick, Aubrey, or me? But he then said, right, but right now I feel like Muhammad Ali. Kendrick, being the competitor that he is, he wanted to ensure to separate himself from that. And this is not off brand for Kendrick. I don't know if you guys remember the Control verse where Kendrick basically dissed like every major rapper at the like by name in the game, just trying to tell him like, yo, I don't care about any of you guys. I am the best out here. And I think it's very important to highlight that hip hop, one of the foundations of hip hop is the battle. It is a very braggadocious sport. You know, everybody wants to be the king, you know, and at the end of the day, kings are made from war. You know, you got to go to war to be the king. That's just what it is. That's what it's been. And it's one of the foundational principles of hip hop. Y'all could argue with me on that. But guess what, guys? That's what it is. We are in a very soft ass era. Look, we are where we are, but it's a battle, man. And it's going to get chippy. And I want people to understand, like, one, clearly I do not condone violence one bit, but it's a sport. You know, boxers are friends outside of the ring. Michael Jordan and Larry Bird hung out during the playoffs, you know, when they were going at each other. It's a sport. You know, it don't got to get ugly. It doesn't have to go Biggie and Tupac. You know, that was something that happened. But you look when Nas and Jay-Z were going at it, that shit was real. But look at their relationship right now. It does not have to be that. So I don't want you guys to think that, oh, we got to kill each other. We got like, nah, that's not it. And I really feel like, I genuinely feel like when this battle started, Kendrick's intention was not that. Again, look at the verse from Control. It was like a playful jab. You know, it was an exhibition. You know what I'm saying? And him trying to be like, yo, I'm the best. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe where things are currently, it's gotten so disrespectful. It's gotten ugly. And, you know, I as soon as I saw the turn, I was like, I don't like what's happening here. But here we are, right? But again, like Dipset and the Lox, they had their versus battle. It was aggressive. It was chippy. You had Styles P pulling on Cameron's leg. And then they went on tour after, right? It was like they was in the ring, but it's all good. It's not that deep. It's rap. It's words. It don't got to be that. Now, so again, it started off with J. Cole's line, the first person shooter. And the crazy thing about this is J. Cole actually started this whole thing. You know what I'm saying? J. Cole started this whole shit. And Kendrick Lamar responded in the Future and Metro Boomin song like that. Now, it was interesting because it felt like there was just something else there, because we didn't know that Future or Metro Boomin had an issue with Drake. But that whole We Don't Trust You project, which the song was on, it just kind of turned into like the Fuck Drake album. I don't know how that happened. We still don't know exactly why, but everybody, there was a few different shots at Drake on that album. The Weeknd took shots at him. You know, Rick Ross was on the album. He didn't take shots at Drake on the project, but, you know, after the project dropped and everybody was talking about the Kendrick verse, Rick Ross was driving around in his Maybach playing the verse, you know, so he was jumping in it. It was a thing. And Drake and J. Cole were on tour at the time. Well, Drake was on tour and J. Cole was popping in on certain dates. And everyone was kind of waiting for the response, waiting for the response. Then J. Cole came back. You know, he dropped 7-Minute Drill. And it was, I thought it was a cool record. And when, like I said, when this beef started, I didn't have Kendrick Lamar picked as the winner. I didn't see, even on that Control verse, I thought it was cool, but it was just kind of like, F you guys, I'm better. I didn't really hear, you know, some cool disses or whatever. It was just like, all right, you gangster because you popped it off, but you know, impress me. I wasn't impressed. And I thought at that time, I really felt like J. Cole was the strongest artist out. J. Cole had been begging for smoke from anybody that wanted it for years. He was getting on songs with people, was talking about how I'm annihilating people I'm on the tracks with and you don't want to rap with me and all this. So I thought Cole was just, you know, itching, waiting to go. And I was very disappointed in him when, you know, he dropped 7-Minute Drill. It sounded like, you know, it was a little warm up. It was like, hey, I'm responding. But the fans, I feel like, didn't really feel it. And, you know, J. Cole backed out. Now, when this first happened, I said he was straight pussy. You know what I'm saying? I thought that it was the softest thing that I'd ever seen happen in hip hop, because not just did he drop the most respectful diss track of all time, but, you know, it was a light pack, you know, it was cool. But, and then, mind you, the guy has been begging for smoke from people that he was on songs with, right? To exert yourself as the best in that way, someone come at you with a diss, you know, coming like with the direct response on the Like That record from Kendrick, and to immediately back off after you put the thing out. And Kendrick didn't even respond at that point. You know, J. Cole drops this record and then he rescinds it, then apologizes to Kendrick for responding to his diss in front of his hometown audience at his own festival. You know, and I said it was soft because at that point, it was just a friendly, I'm not going to say friendly, but it was an exhibition. You know, it was, hey, I'm the best. No, I'm the best. No one was talking about wives, kids, nothing. It was just saying, I'm a better artist than you. And I would have liked if that was where this thing stayed, you know. So J. Cole put his thing out, pause, and then he took the track back and he apologized. All right, cool. Now, and seriously, I really want to know what the hell did Drake do to all these people? Now, Drake responds with Push Ups, which I thought was a pretty good track. You know, I heard Push Ups. I was impressed, man. You know, I thought it was dope. And I feel like, you know, the rollout was a little sloppy. There was like a demo, not a demo, but there was a leak, which was not a finalized version. The beat was a little different and all this stuff. A couple lines were removed. He made a little Diddy diss, and that was removed. So, you know, I thought Push Ups was dope, though. I thought Drake was bouncing. He was doing his Drake thing on there. I like the record. I do. And it was fun because, and this is where things really started to heat up, because the same night, maybe it was like an hour or two later, Rick Ross responded, because Rick Ross also got dissed on Push Ups. So Rick Ross responded with Champagne Moments immediately after. Now, for everyone that hasn't heard these songs, go to wineandhiphop.com in the playlist. I do have a full What's Beef playlist available with this, as well as a bunch of other classic diss records. But so Rick Ross dropped immediately after the Push Ups record. And I'm going to keep it trill with you. Now, don't get me wrong. Rick Ross is my rap spirit animal, right? Y'all know I do the rap spirit animal thing. Like, what artist do we feel represents our spirit and our energy so much? I like Ross because Ross is a rapper's rapper. You could tell he loves the bars. He loves rap music, but he's also a businessman. You know, he's not like a backpacker or anything. He got the chains. He got the big house. I love that. I love Rick Ross, but I wish he didn't respond because I didn't really like the record. I just thought it was cool. You know, it was some fun little jabs, but it wasn't a response. And the Push Ups record at the time was so, so strong that, you know, I'm like, damn, you know, this, I don't know. Like, so far, Drake really got this. Now, he didn't respond to Ross immediately after. He was really trying to go at Kendrick on this thing, like the lines with the, like, how you big stepping with a size 7 men's on, like, that was it. Drake was doing his amazing Drake thing, and you know, so Kendrick still hadn't responded. I think it was after like a week, and Drake did the Drake thing again. He tried to back him. He tried to Meek Mill him, and in my opinion, this is where Drake really showed his hand and who he was. He cheddar bobbed himself, in my opinion. He shot himself in the nuts. Now, because in this space, with the amount of, and even during this time, there had been reference records released. So for those of you that don't know, a reference record is when someone writes a song for someone, they record the actual song, so that the person that they're writing the song for can memorize the cadence and flow and everything. And then all these reference tracks for Drake started to come out. And I was pissed. I ain't gonna hold you. I was pissed because one of my favorite Drake songs, Jumbotron Vision, I found out Lil Yachty wrote it. I was disappointed. Now, don't get me wrong. Even with hearing the reference track, I do think that Drake's version sounded better because Drake sounded better, like, saying it. But yo, y'all heard me talk about this shit for years. I've gone to bat for Drake about how versatile he is and how he can emulate a style so well that he's almost better than these artists that do that style when he does it. But we've been hoodwinked, man, because these artists are fucking writing the records for him, man. Like, and I'm sorry, bro. Even with the Push Ups record, if you look at the writers on, like, he had 3 or 4 writers on there. How you got ghost writers on your diss track response? I'm sorry, bro. Below the belt, you cancel yourself, in my opinion, on that. But he didn't just screw himself up there. Like, so he comes out after Push Ups. He drops another record even before Kendrick responds. taunting Kendrick, like, yo, respond. And he drops this tailor-made freestyle utilizing AI technology. Now, the whole AI conversation is a different thing, but personally, I feel like AI has no place in music, right? AI, now I use AI all the time with other things, but I think that AI has no place in art. Art is about the soul. Art is an expression of you, of a person. Artificial intelligence is not a person. When you look at an AI photo, they can't match the eyes, the soul. The eyes are the windows to the soul, and AI doesn't have a soul, and that's obviously present in all of its art. Now, the reason I'm saying this was an extra lame for Drake was because you have all these ghostwriter claims. And in between that time, before Kendrick ultimately did respond, and before Drake dropped the tailor-made freestyle, there was someone who created an AI track of a Kendrick Lamar response. And, you know, it was pretty good. It was cool. But it was AI, right? And this is the sad part. Drake actually copied the way that this person created this track and then created his own track. Now, and this is reported by DJ Academics, who shout out to DJ Academics, man. He has been the person that's kept everybody abreast of what's going on. He's the first one. We're going to get to Academics in a minute, but shout out to Academics. He's been crushing it. Every time a diss track drops, I go straight to Twitter and I go see what Academics has to say about it. But he's been at the pulse of this thing, and Academics reported this, that homeboy who created the AI track with the Kendrick response, he mentioned that someone from Drake's camp reached out to him to confirm that it actually was AI. He said, yes, this is AI, I created it. And they asked him, how did he do it? He told them how he did it. And then a week later, Drake drops this response using AI. He actually did exactly what this guy did and made a fake response using Tupac and Snoop. Right. And then, you know, he rapped on the last verse. And I'm just like, yo, this shit is corny. Because number one, bro, if you know anything about California and the West Coast, they don't play about Tupac. Like, there's Tupac fans that just don't play about Tupac. So just leave that shit out of there. You don't got to do it. You already, at that point, you were in the lead. You don't need to do this. But then you put Snoop, you do an AI version of Snoop. Snoop is still alive, bro. Like, you can't do that without that man's blessing. It's just lame. Like, Snoop and Kendrick got a relationship. You know, we in the internet era where people aren't very smart and people don't do their research. You could have someone that listens to this track and thinks that, you know, Snoop is siding with Drake, and then they got an issue with Snoop. It's just lame to me. Like, it's just lame. I thought it was just lame. The track wasn't great. You know, it was cool. But it was just unnecessary. But how you gonna bite a fake track? So after you got ghostwriter claims. So after that, I at that point, I'm like, damn, Kendrick really won this thing, because these dudes, he was going at J. Cole and Drake. And in my opinion, they both eliminated themselves before he had even responded, which was crazy. And Kendrick took a bit to respond, but damn, when he did, he did. Kendrick came back with Euphoria, which was a very layered, and, you know, we talk about complex wines all the time, something that has lots and lots of layers that continue to reveal themselves itself. But Kendrick's Euphoria was fucking crazy. It was such I play this shit every day still, you know. It's one of the best joints that I thought came out within this entire battle. But the Euphoria response was amazing. He did a great job. The shit was knocking. You know, I didn't have Kendrick, and I had to apologize to mad people because I didn't have Kendrick picked as the winner on this. At that point, in my opinion, Kendrick ain't even have to respond, but he popped it off, so we had to. But I didn't have Kendrick picked as the winner on this because I didn't see him as a battle rapper per se. But the Laird disses on this was just, I mean, it was fucking amazing, man. Like, and he really picked Drake apart as an artist in a lot of ways. I felt like the Kendrick track was really smart. It was very Kendrick. And he did his thing on it, man. But then, you know, he came back again with 6:16 in L.A. And, you know, it was another dope track. I thought it was cool. It was over this this Marvin Gaye joint, you know, and it was a smooth track. It was a smooth diss record. And, you know, a lot of people had things to say about it. I know, like, Mace and Cam, they were like, yeah, nah, I don't know. I saw Gilly online, like, nah. But it sounded like he was responding to things that hadn't been said. So, you know, that night is when I recorded this podcast, you know. So that night, the same night that 6:16 in L.A. dropped, Drake dropped Family Matters. You know, which was, it was scathing. And that is when this battle turned ugly. And, because he was, you know, just talking about his family. But, I mean, even still, honestly, on Drake's push-ups, I didn't like it because, you know, he went straight to talking about his wife and all this. It's like, it was a friendly battle. It was not, don't leave the wife and kids out of it, man. And, you know, when Kendrick went at Drake and J. Cole, they weren't talking about their family and all this stuff. When J. Cole responded and rescinded, I gave J. Cole shit because it was a, you know, he gave him some light jabs. It wasn't, you can disrespect a person and not talk about their family. So I want to respond to something that my pastor said recently. Yo, shout to my man Pastor Lee. He's gonna be on this show pretty soon. I think he's amazing. But he utilized the Kendrick, Drake, and J. Cole issue in the sermon last Sunday, and he talked about how people were getting at J. Cole for doing something soft and. You know, he stood on business. He did what he felt was right. You can't allow a person to take you out of your zone and who you are. And J. Cole stood on business, which I appreciate. The thing, and I'm going to have this conversation with Pastor Lee tomorrow, but, you know, I feel like J. Cole could have stood on business and he could have maintained his integrity and just not made it ugly. It could have just been a battle, you know, where they just kept it lyrical. And I thought that that's what everyone was going to do. But in Drake's immediate response, he went straight at the wife. And I'm just like, bro, what are you? It's like, if we going to fight dirty, then we're fighting dirty. You know, so right after the Drake response, that's when that shit just got ugly. You know, like even Rick Ross's response, calling him white boy and all this stuff. And there's a lot more talking than there was rapping. You know, and that's what I didn't want to see. And that's where shit, you know, began to take this ugly turn. So here we are. Drake drops Family Matters where he's just, you know, he's talking about the guy's wife, saying that his kids aren't his. Like, this shit was just ugly. Don't get me wrong. He was spitting. And on this one, it says Drake wrote it by himself. But who knows at this point, right? But then... twist, right? So I remember when this happened, and yo, this shit felt like back in the days when you was watching wrestling Saturday night main event, and like Stone Cold's running down the aisle, something popped in. I was talking about this shit, and I'm listening to 6:16 in LA, then I listen to Family Matters, and I'm like, yo, it sounds like Kendrick was responding to things that Drake said in this record before it even dropped. Literally, I'm talking about my peoples, and literally, as soon as I said that, I get a text, yo, Kendrick just dropped again. This shit was like 30 minutes or an hour after the Drake record dropped, and he drops this record called Meet the Grams, where, you know, not just is this record clowning Drake for having leaks in his operation, and, you know, but clearly, Kendrick had heard this song that Drake dropped before he dropped it. He waited for him to drop this record and released his response an hour after. It was hilarious because you know, that's his whole thing. He's calling him a fake dude and showing like, yo, your people that's around you don't even respect you, you know, and, it, you know, you're not a real dude. And that's the whole thing. I feel like, you know, Kendrick really won this thing because of, you know, look, let's keep it real, man. Drake ain't a real one. He's not, you know, like you could, like we all saw his progression as an artist. We saw this guy in Degrassi, you know, with him as a kid actor, like there's interviews with him saying that he grew up in a, you know, a Jewish household and had a nice upbringing and all this stuff. Now this guy's talking about shooting and doing all this shit. It's like, bro, you don't even got to do that. Like, you don't. You just don't. Like, why? Just talk about your real life and who you really are and what you stand for. I hate to see when people get famous to get gangster. It's just completely unnecessary. So Kendrick really just really exposed that thing and the whole Meet the Grams thing. And then talked about him having a daughter, which he was hiding. Which and it sounded a little weird when he said Drake had an 11-year-old daughter. That seemed a little, I don't know how that's even possible for him to hide a daughter that long. And then the following day, he again drops. And like, but when Kendrick dropped that Meet the Grams, it felt like Stone Cold Steve Austin was running out of the back. And that's what that shit felt like in hip hop. That is something which we haven't had. And I think that one of the coolest things about this battle is the way that technology has been embraced. You know, I gave Drake his shit about using AI in the TaylorMade freestyle, but at the end of the day, it's utilizing technology and where we are. So it just shows, it's always interesting to see current culture expressed in its art, right? And at the end of the day, AI is here. And it was utilized in this battle. Also, we're in the information era where things travel fast. Like we talked about DJ Academics. When I was coming up, you know, when the Jay and Nas beef was happening and the Rockefeller and you know, D Block and all that, we had DJ K Slay, RIP to K Slay, man, a drama king. And to hear the records that these artists were dropping, you would have to get the K Slay tape. You know, when, and that's when you would hear the responses however long after. Or, you know, there was a time when, damn, yo. And honestly, up until this point, my favorite diss verse was that Beanie Siegel special delivery freestyle when he was talking about Jadakiss and Nas. That shit was crazy. And that was how we got our music at that time. But we couldn't get these things this fast and hear. We're getting this stuff in real time. Rick Ross dropped the same night. Kendrick dropped the same night. There was so much in this entire thing. There was so much happening. Like there's, like you guys will hear the playlist, but you got a whole fucking album full of beef shit. You know what I'm saying? Pop you some Rodney Strong Cemetery and listen to some music. But and then the next day, and to me, this is the most interesting thing about this, because I told you guys about a podcast that I scrapped. I'm going to use that podcast here. You're going to hear this after this conversation that I have is wrapped. But after I heard Meet the Grams, I said that Kendrick won this thing. And I said that he won because he utilized, it was a terroir-driven rap. And at that point, that was the last joint, Meet the Grams. And I'm going to give you guys a sample of what's going to be happening in these Terroir Tapes listening sessions with me talking about that and I record that podcast the night that the Family Matters and Meet the Grams records dropped. But yo, the next day, Kendrick dropped a fucking nuclear bomb. Not Like Us. Damn. He hit Drake with a taste of his own medicine. This was a strategy that Drake beat Meek Mill with, where when Drake dropped Back to Back, he dropped a diss record that was a club banger. So you got, now you Meek Mill, you got to be out, and you hearing people rocking the back to back. That shit was slapping. And even that, it's rumored that a California artist, Daylight, wrote that record. I don't know. I gotta read the credits. I don't know, but that's what people saying. But Kendrick dropped Not Like Us, which is a perfect example of terroir driven hip hop. Now, you can listen to it. It sounds like a California record. You hear that shit, you want to crip walk. Like, I'm sorry, I don't gangbang, but that shit make you want to just be from California. And he really, I think that Kendrick won this battle off of terroir, because, and he did it at his own game. Like, bro dropped the record of the summer right now. Like, that, I really think Not Like Us is going to be the record of the summer. Like, you could look online right now, and Drake is getting clowned like crazy. Everybody loves that Not Like Us record. Even when people say they don't like it, they look like haters, man. I seen some dudes online like, no, I don't like it. That's a fucking lie. That record is a slapper. Yo. You can't front on that record. It's perfect. But again, you know, Kendrick went in, man. And, you know, he was talking about the dude's family and all that shit. But look, if somebody talks about my family, then, you know, what are we going to do, right? Now, after Not Like Us, Drake dropped The Heart Part 6, where he was saying, and this is where I feel like things got really muddy, because he's saying that, you know, he had people feed him fake information for him to respond on. Now, personally, it does sound like, you know, Kendrick might have ran with some stuff that he heard and didn't really do research on. However, even with that, if you fed this guy fake information, it's still sloppy as shit, right? Because if that is the case, like, at least have it documented and make him look like a fool. That, yeah, this is the person that said this. This is when they said it to you, blah, blah. It's just like, here you are saying stuff just like this guy's saying stuff, you know? And even that, you know, with, I could break this thing down line for line where, you know, I'm not saying that, like, Drake is saying Kendrick beats his girlfriend, beats his wife and all this stuff. And, you know, everyone's saying they calling him BBL Drizzy. Yo, that's the worst part. That's the worst part about this. The music that is coming out in dissing Drake, the music is so good. The music is so good. And the jokes are funny. You know, they're exposing a lot of things. At the end of the day, Drake has been dissing women. Like, yo, bro, diss Megan Thee Stallion. God knows why. I don't know. You know, I don't know these people. But in my opinion, what are you dissing a woman for? You know, but, and again, I'm someone, when I came in, I had J. Cole winning this thing. And then when I heard Push-Ups, I'm like, all right, Drake got this. But man, that Kendrick stripped him down, man. And when you listen to The Heart Part 6, Drake just sounds tired. He sounds fatigued. And he's just like, yeah, you know, I don't even feel like doing this no more. And here he is. He's talking, you know, at the end of the track. Yo, Kendrick don't speak at all on these records. He just fucking raps. If I was to strip everything away, let's say that everything that they're saying about one another is true, the bottom line is the music that Kendrick has released is better than the music that Drake has released. Period. It's shown in the way that it's being received. Every, like, you know, you look at the amount of dislikes on it, like, you know, and again, it's getting ugly, but like people just, like the people have spoken, bro. Like Drake lost this one, and it would be different if he didn't put The Heart Part 6 out and just sound worn out. He sounded fatigued. It sounded like he ain't have really nothing else. You know, it was just repeating stuff that he already said. So in my opinion, I think that this thing is clearly over. You know, if I'm Drake, yo, just take this L on the chin. You fought a good fight. You know, a lot of these songs that you put out are pretty good, but it's over, man. Like, as a hip hop fan, I'm tired. I don't even want to hear no more. I'm cool. Like, we got the music. this was great. Nobody, please. I don't want anybody to get hurt. I heard that, you know, I saw that Drake's house. They shot up Drake's crib the other day. You know, that's ugly and unfortunate. And I just hope that it all stops there. But, and look, for y'all that don't know, that shit ain't had nothing to do with Kendrick. This is some Canada beef that's going on. There was some shit that's happening with Drake's camp and The Weeknd's camp. The week before this thing happened, The Weeknd's manager's house was shot at, and you know, and then the same exact thing happened to Drake's house the following week. So clearly, look, guys, let's keep this shit on wax, man. That shit is whack. Don't give the culture a black eye. We don't want to see another Biggie and Tupac situation. Drake and Kendrick are two juggernauts in the game that are known for making amazing music. Let's keep that as what they are known for. But now I'm going to get into my whole terroir tapes thing. I'm going to do a breakdown, and y'all are going to hear it. This shit is documented. And I've heard Ebro talk about this and why Kendrick was the clear winner, but it came down to terroir. It came down to regional identity, because the nail in the coffin was that Not Like Us record. And what it comes down to is that record sounds like California, you know, and Ebro put this really well when he said, you know, the regional identity piece to beef has always been big, with, you know, Tupac having the West Coast on his back, Biggie, people standing for Brooklyn, you know, it's Kendrick repped LA. And this is the win is like, and again, I'm not knocking Drake as a person. I don't know him, but Drake's music has no regional identity. He's like a chameleon that fits in pretty much anywhere you go. Sometimes you UK Drake, sometimes you Atlanta Trapper Drake, sometimes, like, you from Canada, bro. You ain't making music about Canadian bacon or Riesling or nothing like that, you know. But yeah, man, I you know, shout to Kendrick, bro. Like, and shout to my man Derek Westbrook, shout to my man Brandon Robinson. They both told me that Kendrick was gonna cook and Kendrick would win this. I did not see Kendrick Lamar as a battle rapper. My hat's off to you, man, because the level of respect that I have for this guy's pen now. I mean, and I always thought Kendrick was an amazing rapper, but I was just like, I don't like the weird voices, and I don't like when it's too much sing-songy shit. I like bars. And in this battle, he gave us bars. This is the Kendrick that I want to hear. All of this music was fucking fire. I think that hip-hop also won in this, because we got a lot of great music out of artists that do not drop this often. It was very fun to watch. You know, let's keep it, let's clean it up. You know, let's keep it clean. Let's not get anyone else's house shot up and all that shit, man. But, you know, I want to also address, like, I saw Questlove put something up where he said that hip hop is dead because this isn't a battle. It's gotten too nasty and it's standing third. But look, Drake should have never started talking about that man's family. It did not start there. It was an exhibition battle, and that is okay. Battle rappers do all this shit and they friends outside of the ring, you know, boxers that go in the ring, they fight, they come out. It is what it is, you know what I'm saying? But I think that Drake went directly to being too personal. Should have kept that shit that way. You not no gangster. You're not. This ain't what, yo, like, the guy's record is documented, man. Like, you've seen the evolution. Let it be that. You know, I really hate when people get money to become gangster. Like, you know, but whatever, man. That's my opinion on it. You know, at the end of the day, bro is an amazing artist. I don't know that man personally. So, I'm just talking about the music and what's out there. But I want y'all to check out the terroir tape session portion of this. And other than that, man, it's your man Wolf of Wine. Y'all see y'all out on the road. Y'all stay tuned. We dropping every week. I got a lot of great podcasts coming up. I'm also going to be putting out my conversation with Eric Asimov, which we recently did in Tulsa. And y'all going to hear a lot more from me, man. So make sure y'all stay tuned. Pull up at the Terroir Tapes listening sessions. I'm in every city. And watch out for Wine Bars Volume 1 for the love. Go to wineandhiphop.com right now. You get the playlist. You can get on the wait list for the book. You can also get tickets to pull up to the events, man. So without further ado, I'm gone. Peace.